The yearly competition was a festive three-day affair. Once it had been only games and drinking, with nothing at stake except pride. In those days it was smaller, and traditionally held on the Erie. But since the challenge system had been instituted 7 years ago, flyer participation had grown dramatically, and it had been necessary to move the competition to the islands. The landsmen competed for it eagerly, donating facilities and labour. It was a holiday for their own people and brought crowds of visitors with good metal coin from other islands. The landbound had few spectacles like it, and the flyers were still figures of romance and adventure to many of them. This year the contests were to be held on Skulney, a mid-sized island to the northeast of Little Shotan. Seatooth's landsmen had chartered a ship for Sina and the Woodwingers, and a runner had just brought word that it was waiting at the small island's only port. They would sail on the evening tide.
"Setting out in the dark," Sina grumbled, taking a seat beside Maris at breakfast, asking for trouble.
Care looked up from his porridge. "Oh, but we have to leave on the tide," he said earnestly. "That's why we leave in the evening." Sina regarded him sourly with her good eye.
"Know a lot about sailing, do you?"
"Yes, ma'am. My brother Rack captains a trading ship, one of the big three masters, and my other brother is a sailor too, though he's only a hand on a channel ferry. I thought that I—well, before I came to Woodwings, I thought I'd be a sailor too. It's about the closest thing there is to flying."
Sina shuddered. "Like flying without control, like flying with weights dragging you into the sea, like flying blind. Yes, that's sailing."
She'd been speaking loud enough for everyone to hear, and there was widespread laughter around the room. Care blushed and concentrated on his bowl. Maris looked at Sina with sympathy, trying not to laugh for Care's sake. Sina, although grounded for years, had never lost the flyer's almost superstitious fear of travelling by sea.
"How long will it take?" Maris asked.
"Oh, they say winds willing 3 days, with a stop in Stormtown. What does it matter? Either we'll get there or we'll all drown."
The teacher looked at Maris.
"You fly to Skulney today?"
"Yes."
"Good," Sina said, reaching across to take Maris by the arm. "Then everyone need not drown. We have two sets of wings we'll be needing in the competition. It would be insane to take them in the boat with us."
"Ship?" Care interrupted. Sina looked at him.
"Boat or ship? It would be insane. We might as well put them to use. Will you take two of the students with you? The long flight should be good practice."
Maris looked down the table and saw how everyone within hearing distance had suddenly become still. No spoons were raised, no jaws moved, as they waited for her answer.
"That's a fine idea," Maris said, smiling. "I'll take Srella with me, and,
She hesitated, trying to decide who to choose. Two tables down, Val set down his spoon and rose.
"I'll go," he said.
Maris's eyes met his across the room. "Srella and Cher or Leia," she said stubbornly. "They need that kind of flight the most."
"I'll stay with Val then," Srella said quietly.
"And I'd rather go with Leia," Cher added.
"It will be Srella and Val," Sina said irritably, "and I'll hear no more about it. If the rest of us die at sea, they have the best chance of becoming flyers and honouring our memory."
She pushed aside her porridge bowl and turned on the bench.
"Now, I must go see our patron, the landsman, and be obsequious to her for a while. I will see you again before you leave for Skulney."
Maris scarcely heard her. Her eyes were still locked with Val's. He smiled at her thinly, then spun and followed Sina from the room. Srella left soon after. Care was talking to her, Maris suddenly realized. She shook herself back to attention and smiled at him.
"Sorry, I didn't hear you."
"It isn't so dangerous," he said quietly. "Not just to sail from here to Skulney. There's only a few miles of open ocean when the ship crosses from Little Shotan to Skulney.
Mostly we'll hug the shores of the Shoterns, with land never out of sight, and the ships aren't as fragile as she thinks. I know about ships.
I'm sure you do care, Maris said. Cena is just thinking like a flyer. After the freedom of having your own wings, it's a hard thing to travel by sea and trust your life to those handling the sails and the tiller.
Care chewed his lip. I guess I see, he said, without conviction. But if the flyers all think that, they don't know much. It's not as dangerous as she says.
Satisfied, he went back to his breakfast.
Maris grew thoughtful as she ate. He was right, she realized with a sense of vague unease. Flyers were often too limited in the ways they thought, judging everything from their own perspective. But the idea that Val's sweeping condemnation of them might have some justice to it disturbed her more than she was willing to admit. Afterward, she went to look for Srella and Val. They were not in their rooms, nor in any of the other obvious places, and no one seemed to know where they'd gone after leaving the common room. Maris wandered through the dark, cool corridors until she was thoroughly lost, making her choice of turning according to whether or not there were torches for her to light in the wall sockets. She was thinking of giving out a cry for help and laughing at herself for being so helpless within the enclosure of walls when she heard very faintly the sound of voices and pressed on. One more turn to the right, and she found them, together, sitting close in a small cul-de-sac with a window overlooking the sea. There was something in the way they leaned near to each other that spoke of intimacy, and it changed Maris's mood to one of annoyance.
"I've been looking all over for you," Maris said abruptly.
Srella half turned away from Val and stood up.
"What is it?" she asked eagerly.
"We're flying to Skulney, you know," Maris said. "Can you be ready to leave in an hour?
Anything you wanted to take with you, you can pack up and give to Cena."
"I can be ready to leave in a minute," Srella said, and her smile put a damper on Maris's pique.
"I was so happy when you named me Maris. You don't know what this means to me."
Her face alight, she leapt forward and embraced Maris. Maris hugged her back.
"I think I do," she said.
"Now go off and get ready." Srella bid a brief goodbye to Val and then was off. Maris stood watching her go, then turned back to him and hesitated. Val was still looking down the tunnel where Srella had disappeared, smiling, but there was something about him. The smile was real, Maris realized. That was it. He was smiling with something like fondness, and it gave him a softer, more human look than she'd ever seen him wear. Then his eyes snapped back to her, and the smile changed subtly, a small twist at the corners, and now he was smiling for Maris, and the smile was full of derision and hostility.
"I haven't thanked you for naming me," he said. "I was so happy when you said I could fly with you."
"Val," Maris said wearily, "we may not like each other, but we have a long flight to make together. You could at least try to be civil. Don't mock me. Are you going to pack?"
"I've never unpacked," he said. "I'll give my bag to Cena and wear my knife. It's the only thing that matters. Don't worry, I'll be ready."
He hesitated.
"And I won't bother you on Skulney. When we land, I'll find my own quarters. Fair enough?"
"Val," Maris started, but he had turned away and was staring through the cell's small window at the moving, cloudy sky, his face cold and closed. Cena brought the others out to the launching cliff to watch Maris, Srella, and Val depart. All of them were in the highest of spirits, laughing and joking, vying with each other for the privilege of helping Maris and Srella with their wings. There was a mood of wild and restless gaiety among them that was infectious. Maris felt her own spirits rise, and for the first time she was eager for the competitions.
"Let them be, let them be," Cena cried, laughing. "They certainly can't fly with a lot of you hanging on their wings."
"Wish they could," mumbled Care. He pushed at his nose, which had turned bright red in the wind.
"You'll have your chance," Srella said, sounding defensive.
"No one grudges you this," Leia said quickly.
"You're the best of us," Cher added. "Save it,"
Sina said, putting one arm around Leia, the other round Cher. Go now. We'll wave goodbye and meet you again on Skulney.
Maris turned to Srella and saw that the younger woman was watching her intently, her whole body tensed and ready for Maris's slightest signal. She remembered her own earliest flights, when she'd still not quite believed that she could have wings of her own, and she touched Srella's shoulder and spoke to her kindly. "We'll all stay close together and take it easy," she said. "The stunts are for the competitions. Right now, we'll concentrate on steady flying. This will be a long trip for you, I know, but don't worry about it. You've got enough stamina for twice the distance. Just relax and trust yourself. I'll be there watching out for you, but you won't really need me."
"Thank you," Srella said. "I'll do my best."
Maris nodded and signalled, and Damon and Leanne came out and unfolded her wings for her, strut by strut, pulling the bright silver fabric taut until her wings were spread 20 feet. Then she was off, leaping from the cliff to a chorus of farewells and good wishes into the cool, steady, faintly rain-scented flow of the wind. She circled and watched Srella's take-off, trying to judge it as if Srella were in competition. No doubt about it, Srella had improved greatly recently. The clumsiness was gone, and she did not hesitate at the edge, but sprang smoothly clear of the fortress, and having judged the wind nicely, began to rise almost at once.
"I don't believe your wings are of wood at all," Maris called to her.
Then both of them swung through the sky in impatient, widening circles, waiting for Val. He had been leaning against the door through all of the joking and the preparations, standing outside it all, his face blank and guarded. He was winged already, having strapped them on without help. Now he walked calmly through the group of students and would-be flyers, and stood perched on the brink of the precipice, his feet half over the edge. Painstakingly, he unfolded the first 3 struts, but he did not lock them into place. Then he slid his arms through the loops, flexed, knelt, and stood again. Damon reached to help him unfold his wings, but Val turned and said something sharp to him. Maris, circling above, lost the words in the wind, and Damon fell back in confusion. Then Val laughed and jumped. Srella trembled visibly in the air, her wings shaking with her shock. From below, Maris heard someone scream and someone else was swearing. Val fell, body straight like a diver's, 20 feet down, 40. And suddenly, he was falling no more. The wings came out of nowhere, flaring, flashing silver-white in the sun as they sprang open, almost with their own volition. The air screamed past them, and Val caught it and turned it and rode on it, and all at once he was flying, skimming the breakers with impossible speed, then pulling up, climbing, soaring, the waves and the rocks and death all receding visibly beneath him, and Maris could hear dimly the peal of his triumphant, wind-blown laughter. Srella had locked into a stall, still watching Val. Maris shouted commands at her, and she broke out of it, twisting her wings at an angle and slanting off back over the land. Above the fortress, its bare rock heated in the sun, she found a strong riser and sailed back up to safety. Below, Sina was cursing up at Val and shaking her cane in apoplectic fury. He paid no attention. He was rising higher and higher, and from the woodwingers on the cliff came the ragged, popping sound of applause. Maris went after him, banking, breaking her circle, heading out over the sea. Val was already ahead of her, but flying easily this time, luxuriating in his stunt. When she caught him, flying as near to him as she dared, above and a bit behind and to the right, she began to shout curses down at him, borrowing freely from Sina's more extensive vocabulary. Val laughed at her. "That was dangerous and useless and stupid," Maris shouted. "You could have killed yourself. A jammed strut. If you hadn't flung them hard enough..." Val still laughed. "My risk," he shouted back, "and I didn't fling them. Rigged springs.
Better than Raven.
Raven was a fool, she shouted, and long dead. What's Raven to you?
Your brother sang that song, too, Val yelled.
Then he banked and dove away from her, abruptly terminating the conversation. Numb, and seeing no use in further pursuit of Val, Maris wheeled around and looked for Srella, who was following several hundred yards behind and below them. She drifted down to join her, trying to tell her pounding heart to relax, willing her stiff muscles to loosen and get the feel of the wind. Srella was ghost-pale and flying badly.
"What happened?" she cried when Maris approached. "I could have died."
"It was a stunt," Maris called to her. "Flyer named Raven used to do it. Val concocted his own version."
Srella flew silently for a moment, considering that, and then a little colour came tentatively back into her face.
"I thought someone had pushed him," she shouted. "A stunt. It was beautiful."
"It was insane," Maris called back.
She was quietly horrified that Srella could possibly have thought one of her fellow students capable of shoving Val to his death. He has been influencing her, she thought bitterly. The rest of the flight, as Maris had predicted, was easy. Maris and Srella flew close together, Val ahead and much higher, preferring the company of rainbirds, it seemed. They kept him in sight throughout the afternoon, but only with an effort. The winds were cooperative, blowing them so steadily towards Skulney that they hardly needed to do more than relax and glide. It was at times a dull flight, but Maris did not regret it. They skirted the coast of Big Showtown, fishing fleets everywhere beyond the little harbour towns, bringing in as big a catch as possible in the storm-free weather. And they saw Stormtown from the air, its great bay in the centre of the city, windmills turning all along the shores, 40 of them or 50. Srella tried to count them, but they were behind her before she was half done. And in the open sea between Little Showtown and Skulney, near sunset, they spied a Scylla, its long neck craning up out of the blue-green water as its rows of powerful flippers churned just beneath the surface. Srella seemed delighted. She had heard about Scyllas all her life, but this was the first she had actually seen. They reached Skulney just ahead of the night. As they circled before landing, they could see figures below setting up lanterns on poles all along the beach to guide in later flyers. Already the small flyer's lodge nearby was ablaze with lights and activity. The parties, thought Maris, began earlier every year. Maris tried to make her landing an example to Srella, but even as she was on her hands and knees, shaking sand out of her hair, she heard Srella thump to the ground nearby, and realized the girl had surely been too busy with her own landing to notice how clumsy or adept her teacher was. Whoops of pleasure and welcome surrounded them at once. Eager hands reached out to them.
"Help you, flyer! Help you, please!"
Maris took hold of one strong hand and looked up into the eager face of a young boy with wind-tangled hair. His face was alive with pleasure. He was here for the glory of being near flyers, and was probably thrilled by the thought of the coming competition on his own island. But as he was helping her off with her wings, and another boy was helping Srella, suddenly there was the sound of wind on wings again, and another thump, and Maris glanced over to see that Val had come in. They'd lost sight of him near dusk, and she had assumed he was already down. He climbed awkwardly to his feet, the great silver wings bobbing on his back, and two young girls moved in on him.
"Help you, flyer!"
The refrain was almost a chant.
"Help you, flyer!"
And their hands were on him.
"Get away," he snapped, anger in his voice.
The girls jumped back, startled, and even Maris looked up. Val was always so cool and controlled. The outburst was unlike him.
"We just want to help you with your wings, flyer,"
the bolder of the girls said.
"Don't you have any pride?"
Val said. He was unstrapping himself without help.
"Don't you have anything better to do than fawn over flyers who treat you like dirt? What are your parents?"
The girl quailed.
"Tenors, flyer."
Then go and learn tanning, he said. It's a cleaner trade than slaving for the flyers.
He turned away from her, began to fold up his wings carefully. Maris and Srella were free of their own wings now.
Here,
said the boy who had been helping Maris as he offered them to her neatly folded. Suddenly abashed, she fumbled in her pocket and offered the boy an iron coin. She'd always accepted the help without payment before, but something in what Val had said had struck a chord. But the boy just laughed and refused to take her money.
Don't you know, he said, it's good luck to touch a flyer's wings.
And then he was off, and Maris saw as he darted toward his companions that the beach was full of children. They were everywhere, helping with the poles, playing in the sand, waiting for the chance to aid a flyer. But looking at them, Maris thought of Val, and wondered if there were others on the island who were not so thrilled by the flyers and the competition. Others who stayed home to brood and sulk and resent the privileged caste that flew the skies of Windhaven.
"Take your wings, flyer,"
a voice said sharply, and Maris glanced over. It was Val, mocking.
"Here," he said in his normal tone, and he offered her the wings he'd worn on the flight. "I imagine you'll want these for safekeeping."
She took the wings from him, holding one pair awkwardly in each hand. "Where are you going?"
Val shrugged. "This is a fair-sized island. Somewhere there's a town or two and a tavern or two and a bed to sleep in. I have a few irons."
"You could come up to the lodge with Srella and me," Maris said hesitantly.
"Could I?"
Val said, his voice perfectly level. His smile flickered at her.
"That would be an interesting scene. More dramatic than my launching today, I'd guess."
Maris frowned. "I haven't forgotten that," she said. "Srella could have hurt herself, you know. She was badly startled by that fool's leap of yours.
I believe I've heard this before," Val said.
"Excuse me." He turned and was gone, walking quickly up the beach with his hands shoved deep in his pockets. Behind her, Maris heard Srella laughing and talking with the other young people, sharing with them her delight in her first long flight. When Maris approached, she broke off and ran to take her hand.
"How was I?" she asked breathlessly. "How did I do?"
"You know how you did. You just want me to praise you," Maris said, her tone a mock scold. "All right, I will. You flew as if you'd never done anything else in your life, as if you'd been born to it."
"I know," Srella said shyly.
Then she laughed in sheer joy.
"It was marvelous. I never want to do anything but fly."
"I know how you feel," Maris said, "but a rest will do us good right now. Let's go in and sit by the fire and see who else has come early." But when she turned to go, Srella hung back. Maris looked at her curiously and then understood. Srella was worried about the sort of reception she would find inside the lodge. She was an outsider, after all, and no doubt Val had been filling her with tales of his own rejection. "Well," Maris said, "you might as well come in, unless you feel like flying back tonight. They'll have to meet you sometime." Srella nodded, still a bit timorous, and they started up the pebbled incline toward the lodge. It was a small two-room building built of soft, weathered white rock. The main room, well lit and overheated by a roaring fire, was noisy, crowded, and unappealing after the clean solitude of the open air. The faces of the flyers seemed to blur together as Maris looked around in search of special friends, Srella standing nervously behind her. They hung the wings on hooks along the walls and began to fight their way across the room. A heavy-set, middle-aged man with a full beard was pouring some liquid into the huge, fragrant stew pot hung over the fire, and roaring insults at someone demanding nourishment. Something about him drew Maris's eyes back after they had passed over him, and with a strange little shock, she recognized the overweight cook. When had Garth grown so old and fat? She started toward him, when thin arms went around her from behind, hugging her fiercely, and she caught the faint whisper of a flowery scent.
"Shally," she said, turning. She noticed the rounded stomach. "I didn't expect to see you here. Heard you were preg..."
Shally stopped her lips with a finger. "Hush. I get enough of that from Corm, and I tell him that our little flyer has to learn about flying from the very beginning. But I am careful, truly. I took the flight slow and easy. I couldn't miss this. Corm wanted me to take a boat. Can you imagine?"
Shally's beautiful mobile face went from one comic expression to another as she spoke.
"You're not going to compete."
"Oh, no, it wouldn't be fair, me with the extra ballast." She patted the small mound and laughed. "I'm to judge, and I've promised Corm that after this I'll stay home and be a good little mother till the baby comes, unless there's an emergency."
Maris felt a pang of guilt, knowing that the emergencies Shally had to fly were caused by her own absence from Amberley. But after the competition, she swore to herself, she'd stay home and tend to her duties.
"Shally, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine," Maris said.
Srella was hanging back shyly, so Maris pulled her gently forward.
"This is Srella, our most promising student. She flew here from Woodwings with me today, her longest flight so far."
"Ooh," Shally arched her brows.
"Srella, this is Shally, from Lesser Amberley, like me. She used to fly guard on me when I was just learning how to use the wings."
They exchanged polite greetings. Then Shally, giving Srella a measuring look, said, "Good luck in the competitions. You'd better not beat Corm, though. I think I'd go mad if he was around the house every day for a year."
Shally smiled, but Srella seemed to take the jest in earnest.
"I don't want to hurt anyone," she said, "but someone has to lose. I want to win as much as any flyer."
Well, it's not quite the same," Shally murmured. "But I was only joking, child. You wouldn't want to challenge Corm, really. You wouldn't have a very good chance."
She glanced across the room. "Excuse me, please. I see that Corm has found a cushion for me, and now I suppose I must go and sit on it if I'm not to hurt his feelings. I'll talk to you later, Maris. Srella, it was nice to meet you."
They watched her moving easily through the crowded room, away from them.
"Would I?"
Srella asked, her tone troubled.
"Would you what? Have a chance against Corm?"
Maris looked at her unhappily, not knowing what to say.
"He's very good," she managed finally. "He's been flying for almost 20 years now, and he's won prizes in lots of these competitions. No, you're probably not his match. But that's no disgrace, Srella."
"Which one is he?" Srella said, frowning. "Over by Shally, see, the dark-haired one, in black and grey."
"He's handsome," Srella said.
Maris laughed. "Ah, yes. Half the landbound girls on Amberley were in love with him when he was younger. They were all heartbroken when he and Shally wed."
That drew a small smile back to Srella's face.
"On my home island, all the boys used to dream about Salandra, our flyer."
"Were you in love with Corm, too?"
"Never. I knew him too well."
"Maris!"
The bellow rang from the rafters, attracting attention all over the lodge. Garth was yelling at her from across the room, gesturing her closer. She grinned.
"Come," she said, pulling Srella after her through the press, nodding polite hellos at old acquaintances as she went.
Garth crushed her in a formidable hug when she reached him, then pushed her back to look at her.
"You look tired, Maris," he told her. "Flying too much."
"And you," she said, "have been eating too much."
She jabbed a finger into his stomach where it hung over his belt.
"What's this? Are you and Shally going to give birth together?"
Garth snorted with laughter.
"Ha!" he growled. "My sister's fault. She brews her own ale, you know. Got a right little business going. I'll have to help her out, of course, by a little now and again."
"You're probably her best customer," Maris said. "When did you grow the beard?"
"Oh, a month ago, two, something like that. I haven't seen you in a half year, it seems."
Maris nodded. "Doral was fretting over you the last time we were at the Eyrie together. Something about a date to get drunk, and you didn't make it?" He frowned.
Oh, he said. Yes, I know all about it. Doral goes on endlessly. I was ill, that's all, no great mystery.
He turned back to the fire and gave his stew a stir.
There'll be food soon. Hungry? I made this myself, southern style, with lots of spices and wine.
Maris turned. You hear that, Srella? You'll get some decent food, it sounds like. She ushered the girl forward to face Garth. Srella's a woodwinger, and one of the best. She'll be taking some poor soul's wings this year. Srella, this is Garth of Skulney, one of our hosts here, and an old friend.
Not that old,
Garth protested. He smiled at Srella.
Why, you're as beautiful as Maris used to be before she got thin and tired. Do you fly as well?
I try to, Srella said.
Modest, too, he said.
Well,
Skulney knows how to treat flyers, even fledglings. Anything you want, you tell me about it. You hungry? This'll be ready soon. In fact, maybe you can help me with the spices. I'm not really from Southern, you know. Maybe I didn't get it right.
He took her by the hand and drew her closer to the fire, then forced a spoonful of stew at her.
Here, try this. Tell me what you think.
As Srella tasted, Garth glanced at Maris and pointed.
Look, you're wanted, he said.
Doral was standing in the doorway, still holding his folded wings, shouting to her above the din of the party.
Go on, Garth said gruffly. I'll keep Srella occupied. I'm the host, after all.
He pushed her toward the door. Maris smiled at him, then began to work her way back across the floor, which had grown even more crowded. Doral, after hanging up his wings, met her. He threw his arms around her and kissed her briefly. Maris found herself trembling as she leant against him. When they broke apart, there was concern in his eyes.
"What's wrong?" he said. "You were shaking."
He looked at her hard.
"And you look worn out, exhausted."
Maris forced a smile. "Garth said the same thing. No, really, I'm fine."
"No, you're not. I know you too well, love."
He put his hands on her shoulders, his gentle, familiar hands.
"Really? Can't you tell me?"
Maris sighed. She did feel tired, she realized suddenly. "I guess I don't know myself," she muttered. "I haven't been sleeping well this past month. Nightmares." Doral put an arm around her and led her through the press of flyers to a wide wooden table against the wall, covered with wines, liquors, and food.
"What kind of nightmares?" he asked.
He poured them each glasses of rich red wine and carved out two wedges of a white crumbly cheese.
"Only one. Falling. I fall through still air, hit the water, and die."
She bit off a mouthful of cheese and washed it down with a gulp of the wine.
"Good,"
she said, smiling.
"Should be," Doral replied. "It's from Amberley.
But you can't really be worried about this dream, can you? I didn't think you were superstitious."
"No," Maris said. "That's not it at all. I can't explain. It just bothers me."
"And that's not all." She hesitated. Doral watched her face, waiting.
"This competition," Maris said, "there could be trouble."
"What kind of trouble?" "Remember when I saw you at Erie? I mentioned that one of the students from Airholm had taken ship for Woodwings."
"Yes,"
Doral said. He sipped at his own wine.
"What of it?"
"He's on Skulney now, and he's going to challenge. And it isn't just any student. It's Val." Doral's face was blank.
"Val?"
"One wing," Maris said quietly. He frowned.
"One wing," he repeated. "Well, I understand why you're upset. I'd never have expected him to try again. Does he expect to be welcomed?"
"No," Maris said. "He knows better. And his opinion of flyers is no better than their opinion of him." Doral shrugged.
"Well, it will be unpleasant, but it needn't ruin the competition," he said.
He'll be easy enough to ignore, and I don't imagine we have to worry about him winning again. No one has lost a relative lately.
Maris drew back a little. Doral's voice abruptly seemed so hard, and the jibe sounded so cruel from his lips. And yet it was almost identical to what she'd said at the academy on the day Val had arrived.
"Dor," she said, "he's good. He's been training for years. I think he's going to win. He has the skills. I know. I've flown against him."
"You've flown against him?" Doral said.
"In practice," Maris said, "at Woodwings. What a—" He drained his wine and set the glass aside. "Maris," he said, his voice low but strained, "you're not going to tell me you've been helping him, too. One wing."
"He was a student, and Sina asked me to work with him," Maris said stubbornly. "I'm not there to play favourites and help only those I like."
Doral swore and took her by the arm. "Come outside," he said. "I don't want to talk about this in here where someone might hear."
It was cool outside the lodge, and the wind coming in off the sea had the tang of salt to it. Along the beach the poles were up, and the lanterns had been lit to welcome night-flying travellers. Maris and Doral walked away from the crowded lodge and sat together on the sand. Most of the children had gone now, and they were alone.
"Maybe this is what I feared," Maris said, with a tinge of bitterness in her tone. "I knew you'd balk at that. But I can't make exceptions. We can't make exceptions. Can't you understand that? Can't you try to understand?"
"I can try," he said. "I can't promise to succeed."
"Why, Maris? He's no ordinary landbound, no little Woodwings dreaming of being a flyer. He's one wing, half a flyer even when he had his wings. He killed Ari. Have you forgotten that?"
"No," Maris said. "I'm not happy about Val. He's hard to like, and he hates flyers, and there's always the spectre of Ari peering over his shoulder. But I have to help him, Dor, because of what we did 7 years ago. The wings must go to those who can use them best, even if they are, well, like Val, vindictive and angry and cold."
Doral shook his head.
"I can't accept that," he said.
"I wish I knew him better," Maris said, "so I could understand what made him the way he is. I think he hated the flyers even before they named him One Wing." She reached over and took Doral by the hand. "He's always accusing, making venomous little jests, when he isn't shielding himself in ice. According to Val, I'm a One Wing too, even if I pretend that I'm not."
Doral looked at her and squeezed her hand tight within his own.
"No," he said. "You are a flyer, Maris. Have no fear of that."
"Am I?" she said.
"I'm not sure what it means to be a flyer. It's more than having wings or flying well. Val had wings, and he flies well enough. But you yourself said he was only half a flyer. If it means, well, accepting everything the way it is, and looking down on the landbound, and not offering help to the woodwingers for fear they'll hurt a fellow flyer, a real flyer. If it means things like that, then I don't think I am a flyer. And sometimes I wonder if I'm not beginning to share Val's opinions of those who are."
Doral let go her hand, but his eyes were still on her. Even in the dark she could feel the anguished intensity of his gaze.
"Maris," he said softly, "I'm a flyer, born to my wings. Val One Wing surely despises me for it. Do you?"
"Dor," she said, hurt, "you know I don't. I've always loved and trusted you. You're my best friend, truly, but—"
"But," he echoed.
She could not look at him.
"I wasn't proud of you when you refused to come to Woodwings," she said.
The distant sounds of the party and the melancholy wash of the waves against the beach seemed to fill the world. Finally, Doral spoke.
"My mother was a flyer, and her mother before her, and on back for generations the pair of wings that I bear has been in my family. That means a great deal to me. My child, should I ever father one, will fly too some day. You weren't born to that tradition, and you've been the dearest person in the world to me,
and you've always proved that you deserved wings at least as much as any flyer's child. It would have been a horrible injustice if you'd been denied them. I'm proud that I could help you. I'm proud that I fought with you in council to open the sky. But now you seem to be telling me that we fought for different things. As I understood it, we were fighting for the right of anyone who dreamed hard enough and worked long enough to become a flyer. We weren't out to destroy the great tradition of the flyers, to throw the wings out and let land-bound and would-be flyers alike fight over them like scavenging gulls over a pile of fish. What we were trying to do, so I thought, was to open the sky, to open the Eyrie, to open the ranks of the flyers to anyone who could prove worthy of bearing wings. Was I wrong? Were we actually fighting instead to give up everything that makes us special and different?
I don't know any more, she said. 7 years ago, I could think of nothing more wonderful than being a flyer. Neither could you. We never dreamt that there were people who might want to wear our wings but reject everything else that makes up a flyer. We never dreamt of them, but they existed. And we opened the sky for them too, Dor. We changed more than we knew. And we can't turn our backs on them. The world has changed, and we have to accept it and deal with it. We may not like all the results of what we've done, but we can't deny them. Val is one of those results. Doral stood up and brushed the sand from his clothes.
I can't accept that result, he said, his voice more sorrowful than angry. I've done a lot of things for the love of you, Maris, but I can see the limits. It's true that the world has changed because of what we've done, but we don't have to accept the evil with the good. We don't have to embrace those like Val Onewing, who sneer at our traditions and seek to tear us apart. He'll destroy us in the end, Maris, with his selfishness and his hatred. And because you don't understand that, you'll help him.
I won't. Do you understand that?
She nodded without looking up at him. A minute passed in silence.
Will you come back with me? Back to the lodge?
No, she said. No, not just now.
Good night, Maris.
Doral turned and walked away from her, his boots crunching on the sand, until the lodge door opened for him with a burst of party noise, then closed again. It was quiet and peaceful on the beach. The lanterns burning atop their poles moved weakly in the breeze, and she heard their faint clattering and the never-ending sound of the sea rolling in and out, in and out. Maris had never felt so alone. Maris and Srella spent the night together in a roughly finished cabin for two not far from the shore, one of 50 such structures that the landsmen of Skulney had had erected to house the visiting flyers. The little village was only half full as yet, but Maris knew that the earliest arrivals had already appropriated the more comfortable accommodations in the lodge house and the guest wing of the landsman's own high hall. Srella didn't mind the austerity of their lodgings. She was in high spirits when Maris retrieved her at last from the dying party. Garth had stayed close to her throughout the evening, introducing her to almost everybody, forcing her to eat 3 portions of his stew after she had praised it incautiously, and regaling her with embarrassing anecdotes about half of the flyers present. "He's nice," Srella said, "but he drinks too much." Maris could only agree with that, though it had not always been so. When she'd come to find Srella, Garth had been red-eyed and close to staggering. Maris helped him to the back room and put him to bed while he carried on a slurred, unintelligible conversation. The next day dawned grey and windy. They woke to the cries of a food vendor, and Maris slipped outside and bought 2 steaming hot sausages from his cart. After breakfast, they donned their wings and flew. Not many of the flyers were in the air. The holiday atmosphere was a contagion, and most were drinking and talking in the lodge, or paying their respects to the landsman, or wandering about Skulney to see what there was to see. But Maris insisted that Srella practice, and they stayed aloft for close to 5 hours on steadily rising winds. Below them, the beach was again choked with children eager to assist incoming flyers. Despite their numbers, they were kept busy.
Arrivals were constant throughout the day. The most spectacular moment, Srella looked on with wondering, awe-struck eyes, was when the flyers of Big Shotan approached en masse, nearly 40 strong, flying in a tight formation, gorgeous against the sun in their dark red uniforms and silver wings. By the time the competition began, Maris knew, virtually all the flyers from the scattered reaches of Western would be here. Eastern would be heavily represented too, although not quite with the unanimity of Western. Southern, smaller and farther, would have fewer still, and there would only be a handful of competitors from the outer islands, desolate Artelia, the volcanic embers, and the other far-off places. It was afternoon, and Maris and Srella were sitting outside the lodge with glasses of hot spiced milk in their hands when Val made his appearance. He gave Maris his mocking half-smile and sat down next to Srella.
"I trust you enjoyed flyer hospitality," he said flatly.
"They were nice," Srella said, blushing. "Won't you come tonight? There's to be another party. Garth is going to roast a whole sea cat, and his sister is providing ale."
"No," Val said. "They have ale enough and food enough where I'm staying, and it suits me better."
He glanced at Maris.
"No doubt it suits us all better."
Maris refused to be baited.
"Where are you staying?"
"A tavern about 2 miles down the sea road. Not the sort of place you'd care to visit. They don't get many flyers there, just miners and landsguard and some less willing to talk about their professions. I doubt they'd know how to treat a flyer properly."
Maris frowned in annoyance. "Do you ever stop?"
"Stop?" he smiled.
All at once Maris was filled with a perverse determination to erase that smile, to prove Val wrong. "You don't even know the flyers," she said. "What right have you to hate them so? They're people, no different from you.
No, that's wrong, they are different. They're warmer and more generous." "The warmth and generosity of flyers is fabled," Val said. "No doubt that's why only flyers are welcomed at flyer parties."
"They welcomed me," Srella said.
Val gave her a long look, cautious and measuring. Then he shrugged, and the thin smile returned to his lips.
"You've convinced me," he said. "I'll come to this party tonight, if they'll let a landbound through the door."
"Come as my guest, then," Maris said, "if you refuse to call yourself a flyer. And put aside your damned hostility for a few hours. Give them a chance."
"Please?" Srella said.
She took his hand and smiled hopefully at him.
"Oh, they'll have a chance to show their warmth and generosity," Val said. "But I won't beg for it, or polish their wings, or sing songs in their praise."
He stood up abruptly.
"Now, I would like to get some flying in. Is there a pair of wings I might use?"
Maris nodded and directed him to the cabin where his wings were hung. After he was gone, she turned to Srella. "You care for him a lot, don't you?" she said softly. Srella lowered her eyes and blushed.
"I know he's cruel at times, Maris, but he's not always like that."
"Maybe that's so," Maris admitted. "He hasn't let me get to know him very well."
Just be careful, all right, Srella?
Val has a lot of hurt in him, and sometimes people like that, when they've been hurt a lot, get back by hurting others, even those who care for them."
"I know," Srella said. "Maris, you don't think they won't hurt him tonight, will they, the flyers?"
"I think he wants them to," Maris said. "So you'll see that he's right about them. About us. But I'm hoping that we'll prove him wrong."
Srella said nothing. Maris finished her drink and rose.
"Come," she said. "There's still time for more practice, and you need it. Let's get our wings back on."
By early evening it was common knowledge among the flyers that Val One Wing was on Skulney and intended to challenge. How the word had gotten out, Maris was unsure. Perhaps Doral had said something, or perhaps Val had been recognized, or perhaps the news had come in from Easton with some flyer who knew that Val had taken ship from Airholm.
It was out and flying in any case. Twice Maris heard the epithet One Wing as she and Srella walked back to their cabin in the Flyer village, and outside their door a young flyer Maris knew casually from the Eyrie stopped her and asked point blank if the rumour was true. When Maris admitted that it was, the other woman whistled and shook her head. It was not quite dark when Maris and Srella wandered up to the lodge, but the main room was already half full of flyers, drinking and talking in small clusters. The promised sea-cat was roasting on a spit above the fire, but by the look of it still had several hours to go. Garth's sister, a stout, plain-faced woman named Risa, drew Maris a mug of her ale from one of the three huge wooden casks that had been set along one wall. "It's good," Maris said after tasting, although I confess I'm no expert. "Wine and kivas are my usual drinks." Risa laughed.
"Well, Garth swears by it, and he's drunk enough ale in his time to float a small trading fleet."
"Where is Garth?" Srella asked. "I thought he'd be here."
"He should be later," Risa said. "He wasn't feeling well, so he sent me on ahead. I think it was just an excuse to avoid helping with the barrels, actually."
"Wasn't feeling well," Maris said. "Risa, is everything all right? He's been ill frequently of late, hasn't he?"
Risa's pleasant smile faded.
"Has he told you, Maris? I wasn't sure. It's only been the past half year. It's his joints. When it gets bad, they swell up on him something terrible, and even when they aren't swelling, he's got pain." She leant a little closer. "I'm worried about him, in truth. Doral is too. He's seen healers, here and in Stormtown too, but no one's been able to do much, and he's drinking more than he used to."
Maris was appalled. "I knew Doral was fretting over him, but I thought it was just his drinking." She hesitated.
"Risa, has Garth told the landsman about his troubles?"
Risa shook her head.
"No, he's..."
She interrupted herself to draw a mug for a craggy-looking Easterner, and resumed only after he had drifted away.
"He's afraid, Maris."
"Why is he afraid?" Srella asked quietly,
looking from Maris to Risa and back again. She had been standing silently by Maris's elbow, listening. "If a flyer is sick," Maris said, "the landsman can call together the island's other flyers, and if they agree, he can take the wings from the sick one, lest they be lost at sea." She looked back toward Risa.
"Then Garth is still flying missions as if he were well?" she said with concern in her voice. "The landsman isn't sparing him?"
"No," Risa said, chewing on her lip. "I'm frightened for him, Maris. The pain comes on so suddenly sometimes, and if it should come while he's flying... I've told him to speak to the landsman, but he won't hear of it. His wings are everything to him. You know that. All you flyers are alike."
"I'll talk to him," Maris said firmly.
"Doral has spoken to him endlessly," Risa said. "It does no good. You know how stubborn Garth can be."
"He should lay down his wings," Srella blurted suddenly.
Risa gave her a hard look.
"Child, you don't know what you're saying. You're the woodwinger Garth met last night, are you not? Maris's friend?"
Srella nodded.
"Yes, Garth spoke of you," Risa said. "You would understand better if you were a flyer. You and I, we can only watch from outside. We can never feel as a flyer feels about his wings. At least Garth has told me so."
"I will be a flyer," Srella insisted.
"Certainly you will, child," Risa said. "But you're not now. And that is why you talk so easily of laying down the wings."
But Srella looked offended. She stood very stiffly and said,
"I'm not a child, and I do understand."
She might have said more, but just then the door opened, and she and Maris both glanced in that direction. Val had arrived.
"Excuse me," Maris said, taking Risa by the forearm and giving her a squeeze for reassurance. "We'll talk more later."
She hurried to where Val stood, his dark eyes sweeping the room, one hand resting on the hilt of his ornate knife, in a pose that was half nervousness and half challenge.
"A small party," he said,
noncommittally, when Maris and Srella joined him.
"It's early," Maris replied. "Give it time.
Come, let's get you a drink and a bit of food." She gestured to the far wall, where a lavish table had once again been spread with spiced eggs, fruit, cheese, bread, various shellfish, sweetmeats and pastries. "The sea cat is the main course, but we'll be waiting hours for that," she concluded. Val took in the sea cat on the spit and the table covered with other edibles.
"I see the flyers are eating simply once again," he said.
But he let himself be led across the room, where he ate two spiced eggs and a wedge of cheese before pausing to pour a goblet of wine. Around them the party went on. Val had attracted no particular attention, but Maris did not know if that was because the others had accepted him, or simply failed to recognize him. The three of them stood quietly for a few moments, Srella talking to Val in a low voice, while he sipped at his wine and nibbled some more cheese, Maris quaffing her ale and watching the front door a bit apprehensively each time it opened. It had grown dark outside, and the lodge was filling up rapidly. A dozen Shotoners, she knew only vaguely, swept in all at once, still in their red uniforms, followed by a half-dozen Easterners she knew not at all. One of them climbed atop Reese's ale casks. A companion tossed him up a guitar, and he began to sing flyers' songs in a passably mellow voice. Beneath him the crowd grew dense, and listeners began to shout up requests. Maris, still glancing at the door whenever it opened, drifted a bit closer to Val and Srella, and tried to listen to them above the music. Then the music stopped. In mid-song, suddenly, singer and guitar both grew silent, and the silence flowed across the room as conversation ceased and all eyes turned curiously to the man perched atop the ale keg. In less than a minute, everyone in the lodge was looking at him. And he was looking across the room, at Val. Val turned in his direction and raised his wine glass.
"Greetings, Lauren," he called in his maddeningly flat tones. "I toast your fine singing."
He drained his wine and set the glass aside. Someone, taking Val's words for a veiled insult, snickered. Others took the toast in earnest and raised their own glasses. The singer just sat and stared, his face darkening, and most of the flyers watched him, baffled, waiting for him to resume.
"Do the ballad of Aaron and Jenny," someone called out.
The guitarist shook his head.
"No," he said, "I've got a more appropriate song."
He played a few opening bars and began to sing a song unfamiliar to Maris. Val turned to her.
"Don't you recognize it?" he said. "It's popular in Easton. They call it the Ballad of Airy and One Wing."
He poured himself more wine and raised the glass again in mocking tribute to the singer. With a sinking feeling, Maris realized that she had heard the song before, years past, and what was worse, had enjoyed it. It was a rousing, dramatic story of betrayal and revenge, with One Wing the villain and the flyers the heroes. Srella was biting her lip in anger, barely holding back her tears. She started forward impulsively, but Val restrained her with a hand on her arm and shook his head. Maris could only stand helplessly, listening to the cruel words, so very different from those of her own song, the one Col had composed for her. She wished he were here now, to compose a song in answer to this. Singers had a strange power, even amateurs like the Easterner across the room. When he was finished, everyone knew. He tossed his guitar down to a friend and jumped down after it.
"I'll be singing on the beach if anyone cares to hear," he said.
Then he took his instrument and left, followed by all of the Easterners who had arrived with him and a good many others. The lodge was suddenly half empty again.
"Lauren was a neighbour," Val said. "From North Erin, just across the bay. I haven't seen him in years."
The Shotoners were talking softly among themselves, one or two of them giving Val, Maris and Srella pointed looks from time to time. All of them left together.
"You haven't introduced me to your flyer friends,"
Val said to Srella. Come. He took her hand and led her forcefully to where four men were clustered in a tight circle. Maris had no choice but to follow.
I'm Val of South Erin, he said loudly. This is Srella. Fine flying weather today, wasn't it?
One of the four, a huge, dark man with a massive jaw, frowned at him.
I admire your courage, One Wing, he rumbled, but nothing else about you. I knew Harry, though not well. Do you want me to make polite conversation with you?
This is a flyer's lodge and a flyer's party, one of his companions said sharply. Do you two have business here?
They are my guests, Maris said furiously. Or do you question my right to be here too?
No. Only your tasting guests.
He clapped the big man on the shoulder.
Come, I've a sudden urge to hear some singing.
Val tried another group, two women and a man, with ale mugs in their hands. Before he had quite reached them, they set down their mugs, still half full, and left. Only one party remained in the room. Six flyers that Maris knew vaguely from the far reaches of Weston, and a single blonde youth from the outer islands. And suddenly they were leaving too. But on the way to the door, one of them, a man well into his middle years, stopped to talk to Val.
You may not remember, but I was among the judges the year you took Harry's wings, the man said. We judge fairly, but some have never forgiven us for the verdict we handed down. Perhaps you did not know what you were doing, perhaps you did. It makes no difference. If they were so reluctant to forgive me, they will never forgive you.
I pity you. But we're helpless. You were wrong to come back, son. They will never let you be a flyer.
Val had been calm through everything else, but now his face contorted in rage.
I do not want your pity, he said. I do not want to be one of you. And I am not your son. Get out of here, old man, or I will take your wings this year.
The grey-haired flyer shook his head, and a companion took him by his elbow.
Let's go, Cadden. You waste your concern on him.
When they left, only Risa remained in the lodge room with Maris, Val, and Srella. She busied herself with her ale mugs, gathering them up to wash, and did not look at them.
Warmth and generosity, Val said.
They're not all...
Maris started, and found she could not go on. Srella looked as if she were about to cry.
Then the door crashed open, and it was Garth standing there, frowning, looking puzzled and angry.
What is going on? He said. I stumble up from home to host my party, and everyone's out on the beach. Maris? Risa?
He slammed the door and started across the room. If there was a fight, I'll break the neck of the fool who started it. Flyers have no business quarrelling like landbound.
Val faced him squarely.
I'm the cause of your empty party, he said.
Do I know you?
Garth said. Val, of South Erin.
He waited.
He didn't start anything, Maris said suddenly. Believe that, Garth. He's my guest.
Garth looked baffled.
Then what? I'm also called One Wing.
Comprehension broke across Garth's face, and Maris knew how she must have looked the day she met Val on the Stormtown docks, and had a sickening realization of what it must have felt like to Val. Whatever Garth felt, he struggled to control it.
I wish I could bid you welcome, he said, but that would be a lie. Harry was a sweet, fine woman who never hurt anyone, and I knew her brother too, we all did.
He sighed and looked to Maris.
He's your guest, you say? What would you have me do?
Harry was my friend as well, Maris said. Garth, I don't ask you to forget her, but Val is not her killer. He took her wings, not her life.
They are one and the same, Garth grumbled,
but it was half-hearted. He looked back at Val.
You were a boy then, though, and none of us knew that Harry would kill herself. I've made my own share of mistakes, though none as big as yours. And I suppose
I made no mistake, Val interrupted.
Garth blinked,
"Your challenge was a mistake," he said. "Eri killed herself."
"I would challenge her again," Val said. "She was not fit to fly. Her death was her mistake, not mine."
Garth was always gentle and genial, even his infrequent angers full of bluff and bluster. Maris had never seen his face as cold and bitter as it looked now.
"Out, One Wing," he said, his voice low. "Leave this lodge and do not enter it again. Whether you wear wings or not, I will not have you."
"I won't be back," Val said evenly. "Nonetheless, I thank you for your warmth and generosity." He smiled and headed toward the door. Srella started after him.
"Srella," Garth said, "I don't... You can stay, girl. I have no..."
Srella whirled.
"Everything Val says is true. I hate you all."
And she followed Val One Wing out into the night.